so you can't blame the youth when you get back. You can't fool the youth. You can't blame the youth of today. You can't fool the youth.
Said he was a very great man. Said he was a very great man.
To teach the youths about Christopher Columbus. Said he was a very great man. You teach the youths about Marco Polo. And you said he was a very great man. You teach the youths about the pirate Hawkins. And you said he was a very great man. You teach the youths about the pirate Morgan. And you said he was a very great man. So you can't blame the youth. You can't fool the youth. You can't blame the youths of today.
Good morning. It's Saturday morning, 9 o'clock. That means it's time for the Friendship Show here on KX93.5 FM. Don Price, my co-host, is here. Let's make sure you're on. What mic are you on this morning?
I don't know this one.
Is that you?
That me? That's
there you
me.
Are.
Hi.
I thought you were on mic 3. You're actually on mic 4.
Well, there we go.
It gets confusing around here.
You know, you've really improved, though, in your working of the board. I'm
have
impressed.
I?
We have no Megan today, so Mark is solo on the board.
I know. You get used to having Megan here, and then she doesn't show up, and then it's like, I don't.
It's not like she didn't show up. We knew she wasn't coming. Don't
right.
make it
no.
sound
oh,
like,
I'm
oh,
sorry.
Megan's
did I say
sleeping
she
in. Megan's
who knows
just
where
blowing
is.
Us off today.
Those college kids. did I say she didn't show
you
up?
You said when she doesn't show up.
Oh, when she doesn't show up. Yeah.
She's just not here today.
She has other commitments.
Prearranged. Yeah. Yes.
It's a little distracting in here this morning because there's like a psychedelic mural going up on the
windows. You got to drive by the studios on Pearl Street and Coast Highway because they're putting this funky colored stuff on these walls or on these windows in the studio, and it's going to look awesome, but it feels a little bit like we're kind of in the disco this
it's morning. It's very psychedelic.
Yeah, we need a mirror ball and we'll be ready to go.
I feel like we're in a yellow submarine.
Oh my.
How was your week?
It was good. How was yours?
My week was good. I in case you didn't know, summer has arrived in Laguna Beach.
Yes.
I happened to be downtown last night. And it was crazy.
I happened to try to leave town yesterday. Left our offices at 3:05 for an errand I had to run in Orange.
Yeah.
And at 3:55, I was passing the Canyon Club. It was a little late for my 4 o'clock.
That was kind of my experience.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I will say that, I have to be careful about it. I will say that I stopped in and had some dinner at Watermark.
Nice.
Last night, which best bar food in Laguna Beach.
It's great. Yep.
It was really good. But here's what I found out last night, because I didn't even think I was going to stop. I wanted to see Jason Fetty at Hotel Laguna because he's there every Friday night. And I happened to be in town. And then I thought, but I'm not going to drive all over looking for a parking spot. Do you know that parking structure behind?
Like Big Fish and Nick's and
you know which
Asada.
One I mean? And it's on Glen Eyre?
Yeah.
Do you know that after 7 o'clock, even on the weekends, that's free?
I do.
I didn't realize
Do you know that.
That
in the summer, you can spend 3 hours circling that thing, waiting for one poor person to leave?
I pulled in and got a parking spot right away.
Well, you were lucky.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was a big fine. No. I think someone's missing out on a lot of money, though.
Well, let's tell the council that. Maybe they could give our guest a raise. If
My
they...
guest. Well, I'm sure that once this... village entrance
goes underway.
I'm sure that will probably change.
Yes. Could be.
Then
there's a way to finance
those
that.
Spots will be premium at that point. But I did hear Jason Fetty last night at Hotel Laguna.
Oh, he's there every Friday night?
Every Friday night.
I need to do that. Yeah, I need to go do
fantastic.
That.
He was fantastic. And the place is packed. He packs them in there.
I know one thing you did this week, and it was huge, and I want to thank you, is you got our podcasts up on the website.
I did.
That is incredible. And it's fun to go through there and look at those past shows. And you can just go to the it's kx935.com. There's no point in that website. And if you click on schedule and then click on friendship show, it goes right to that whole list of all of our podcasts, our past shows, lots of great shows there. So people should check that out.
And we'll be putting more up every week.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
You can check back regularly and there'll be something new up.
Yep.
That is a good thing for people to know. Thanks for bringing that up. Do you know about this this Oldsmobile? Do you know about this convertible?
I hear we're raffling something off.
We're raffling off tickets for this this convertible. It's like a 1970 Cutlass Supreme. Yeah. It's a really...
I'm sure my grandpa had that car.
Really nice car, exactly.
Yeah.
And apparently it's it was owned by a former Miss America who lives in Laguna Beach.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's something, too.
It's pretty impressive. Yeah. July 4th, I'm going to be at Savannah Chop House in Laguna Niguel from 5 until I don't know whatever time that party ends, and I'll be selling tickets for the for the convertible. So if you're in Laguna Niguel on July 4th, stop by and you can get a ticket. I think you get a discount if you buy it like in person and I'm there. Somehow that works in your favor.
Nice.
Otherwise, just go to KX935
and get a ticket.
Yeah, and you can get a ticket for that. They're going to sell them all summer.
It's a cool car.
Do you want to talk about our guest this morning?
I do. Our guest is one of my favorite people in Laguna. We have Corporal Jason Ferris here today from the Laguna Beach Police Department. And Corporal Ferris works with homeless issues. He's the community outreach officer with the Laguna Beach Police Department, and works a lot with Friendship Shelter, works a lot with Mark and myself in helping the people in our community who are homeless find their way. Just an incredible partner. I'm really excited to have him with us.
Great. Should we, let's take a music break and then we'll come back and we can meet Corporal Jason Ferris.
Cool.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Friendship Show here on KX 93.5 FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'm here with my co-host, Dawn Price. And our guest this morning is Corporal Jason Ferris. Here's a few things to know about Corporal Ferris. He helped establish the Orange County Community Officers Organization. He has tons of awards for his work as an officer, including being recognized as the Community Officer of the Year for the state of California by the American Legion. He was instrumental in helping to establish the city of Laguna Beach's year-round emergency drop-in shelter, and still plays a big part.
Huge part.
In helping that program continue. He's been 11 years with the Laguna Beach Police Department, and for the last 5 years has been working with mentally ill people on the street. Good morning, Corporal Ferris.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing great. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Sure, no problem. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I sound so happy. He's got that dragnet voice.
Huh?
He's got that dragnet voice.
They teach it in the academy.
Do you? Do yeah. they really?
No.
That no.
How did you?
I mean, that would be kind of, it's possible that they would try to teach you to be emotionless or appear to be emotionless.
They do train us to compartmentalize our emotions.
Yeah.
So they want to make sure that we don't show too much emotion out on the street, so we don't get wrapped up in what's going on. So yeah. We can just take care of what's going on, and sometimes it comes out in the voice.
Yeah. Could be.
Is that a big part of the job, really? Because yeah. I know, actually, it's one of the things that in training staff at Friendship Shelter that we work on constantly, and that is regardless of what the situation is, because sometimes it gets heated and emotional and there's all kinds of things going on, and how do you detach from what's going on so that
sure.
you can just sort of deal with the business that needs to be taken care of.
Right. If you start getting wrapped up and emotionally involved in what's going on, then you start making bad choices. It's kind of funny because my daughter will say, "Dad, you're putting the cop face on," because, you know, I've got a number of kids and they start getting all worked up and something's going on and my face goes blank. And I, you know, I don't get mad. I just go copy is what she says.
Copy, I love
say,
it.
This is how we'll deal with it, you know, and
Dad, and you tell them that this is what you want. You want what I'm doing is detaching right now, because if I acted on my feelings right now, you'd be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it doesn't always work, though.
Yeah.
How long? You've been with the Laguna Beach Police Department for 11 years. How long have you been a police officer?
I had a year at Newport Beach, and then I came here. So I did a couple of years in dispatch in Laguna. So I've been an officer here for about 9 years.
Really? But mm-hmm. this is, other than a brief stint in Newport Beach, this is the community that you've worked in pretty much your
Correct.
Entire career?
I've been here most of the time.
Why law enforcement? Did you just wake up one day and say, I want to be a cop? Or did you know that for a long time? Or
you know, I knew it for quite a while. It's funny because I was going through some old stuff a number of years ago, and I found those aptitude tests that you take in high school. It tells you, you know, what kind yeah. of occupation you should go into. And everything pointed to public service and helping people in that area. But you know, I was about 21, and my dad asked me what I wanted to do. And really, I was watching TV and watching Chips was on, the old TV show. And I told him, I said, you know, I want to go into law enforcement, and I always wanted to. And I just remember having watched the show at that moment. The whole thing goes, well, then you should do that. So. You know, I became a criminal justice and a Spanish double major, and that's what I did. So I got my degrees and went forward with it.
And that was it. So my next question was there a particular person that influenced you? And in your case, that would be Eric Estrada?
It was the other one, John.
Was it?
Nah.
I didn't know there was another one.
You know, a lot of families have law enforcement in their family. I don't have any. I have a couple of firefighters in my family, but no law enforcement. And it's just what I wanted to do and the direction I wanted to go. So,
right. What did your dad do?
He was a truck driver.
Oh, really?
Yeah, retired a couple of years ago. So, you know, as a kid, he was an owner operator, drove his own truck and did his own stuff. And we all, as kids, wanted to be truck drivers. And I had my commercial license for a while. And, wow. You know, it's obviously not what I wanted to do. It's rather boring. So,
did you ever go on the road with him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can remember just sitting and going on long hauls and, yeah, for, you know, 4 or 5 days in the truck.
My sure. dad started his career as a truck driver, and then he became a salesperson. He worked for John Morrell is who he worked for. And it was always during the summer. It was always the kind of a big thing in the summer where, like, 1 week out of the summer, he'd take each kid with him on like a 4-day trip. And so we'd get to go. This was in South Dakota. So we'd get to go to the Black Hills and dig around for arrowheads and, you know, gather pine cones. We thought we were in the wild, wild west.
There you go. It was. We did the same thing. My dad would take us. We'd be out of school and summertime, and he'd go, okay, you know, go on a trip. And he had a sleeper in the back, and you'd go 4 or 5 days with him. And I got to tell you, there's 8-track, you know, cassettes, and that was it. Listen to the CB.
Listen to something on the loop on that over and over.
Over and over and over. Just fast forward, no rewind. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Was that in California? Did you grow up in California?
I grew up in California most of the time. I think when I was 10, I moved out of state. And then when I graduated from high school, I moved back into California, got married, and been here since.
Cool.
Let's talk about Community Outreach Officer Program. Is that your official title?
The Community Outreach Officer, COO, the COO.
The COO?
That's what
they call
some of the officers call me, yeah.
What is that exactly?
It was a position that was created a number of years ago. The city realized that there was a need for an officer to have some kind of, to be a liaison between different groups, including the homeless, city, businesses, regarding the homeless community. And the position was open. I got the position. And I got to tell you, it's not something that you go to the academy for and not something that you expect to do in law enforcement at all. But there's some stuff in my background that fit, and I got the spot. And, you know, we didn't know what we were going to do with it. The department gave me a desk and a phone and a computer and said, do whatever it is you need to do. So I went to a couple.
Did you have to sort of figure out your training yourself?
For sure. Yeah. I went to Santa Ana, worked with Santa Ana some, Santa Monica, San Diego, because they've got some great outreach programs. Talked to a number of different agencies on the phone, Pasadena, LA, and just try to find out, because each city has its own unique problems. It's an overall problem is the homelessness. But each city's unique because the residents of the city and we're very similar to Santa Monica, but they're so much larger. They've got like 8 officers that do what I do, and then they've got 2 sergeants that oversee it, and then they've got vehicles, and it's a completely large program. But we can't do
it's
that.
A larger community.
Sure, yeah, sure. Right. And Santa Ana has. It's smaller, but they have different officers do different things. And so here, you know, we're by ourselves, and one officer was going to be doing everything. So just had to figure it out.
Do you also work with your fellow officers so that they have some basic training, some basic sort of knowledge of how to handle a situation that they would come upon?
Sure. As a matter of fact, the other day, there was a great video that was put out by MHA, Mental Health Association, and it was regarding interacting with mentally ill individuals, officers, and some great techniques that we need to use. And I showed it during briefings. So usually what I do is, if it's not on a one-on-one basis in the field, that I can show an officer, hey, maybe we should handle this direction, instead of the typical way that, you know, law enforcement would handle it. I can go to briefings at the beginning of a shift and say, let's, you know, talk about this, or maybe this situation arises and let's do this. And I get the trainings at different functions or different from different officers in different areas. And so we try to get that out to everybody.
So when this position became open and they were looking for an officer to fill it, you asked to have this job?
No.
Oh, really?
No. In law enforcement, in the academy, you trump up what you want to do. As you know, you want to chase the bad guys and bust the burglars and catch the people doing the bad things. And so in law enforcement, you're not dreaming of outreach or community work or working with the homeless. And so when the position came around, I was asked, hey, you've got these things, you know, things that you've done. We think, you know, with your personality and your work ethic, we think you'd be a good fit. Would you do it? Well, you don't say no. And I said,
so you were encouraged to apply.
Yeah, that would be a good way to say it. Sure. And it's worked out. And, you know, if I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't do it. It's been 5-6 years now.
Why do you, what in your background do you think made people go, let's talk to Ferris and see if he will do this for us?
Social things that I've done, whether it was different positions in college or different organizations that I belonged to. I was a missionary for my church for a couple of years. So I work well with people one-on-one. I don't do a lot of, I'm not a super social person, but I'm a friendly person. And I like people in general. So just all those different things, and working with some of the calls that I had. And I did, as a patrol officer, enjoy working with people in general. And I'd spend extra time trying to solve situations sometimes. And, you know, some of the higher-ups saw that and figured it would be a good fit.
Did you, when you take this position, though, as a police officer, did you have to make some adjustments in the way that you approach your job and personal adjustments in the way that you see things
for
in
sure.
order to be effective?
For sure. In law enforcement, our mentality is there's a problem, fix it, move to the next problem. And that can be detrimental to us sometimes because we don't see the bigger picture. We get a call on the computer saying, hey, come fix this problem. And that's why sometimes we get there and we're short. We'll see it and go, okay, this is what we need to do, ABC, let's fix it, boom, move on to the next thing. Because as soon as we're done with that call, we got another one coming in. Right. Well, that doesn't work with homeless people. It temporarily does. You know, you got a homeless person that's causing there's an issue in a location, and we can say, okay, hey, you know what, the problem is X, move on, go somewhere else. Well, that doesn't solve the problem. That only temporarily fixes the problem at that location. So there was that paradigm shift that I had to look at and go, well, wait a minute. Long term, it doesn't solve anything. It's just scooting the problem around. So for sure.
And it seems to me that you're in this uniquely challenging situation of needing to handle a problem in a specific moment, but wanting to maintain a relationship with that person when that person's a mentally ill homeless person, so that you can be with them in the long haul, even though in this moment you may have to go copy.
Yeah, go cop. Yeah, no, good point. You want to be good cop and bad cop at the same time, in the sense that, look, I know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be doing that. I can write you a ticket. I can arrest you. If it's a minor thing, let's work this out. Let's do something different. And so I can gain their trust that way. Already with the uniform, they're apprehensive, mm-hmm. and they don't want to have that relationship with me because they're used to officers just enforcing the law on them. And so I'm starting on a negative territory. So if I can work with them a little bit and stop them from doing what they're doing and build that relationship of trust, mm-hmm. and just work with them, it usually works out to the best for everybody, for whatever's the problem, and then for the homeless person themselves.
Isn't one of the problems that's just it, is that you come across someone who's homeless and you can write a bunch of tickets and they don't have any money, they're not going to pay for that ticket, and then they might go to jail for a couple of days and they're gone for a couple of days, but then they're back and now they have legal issues, and mm-hmm. And it kind of gets to be a hassle, doesn't it, for the justice system to
sure.
deal with people that...
For everybody, it's a problem, and it's very inefficient, and it's really a bunch of fluff, because it looks like the problem is being solved. You know, a concerned citizen calls us, mm-hmm. and says, "Hey, fix this problem." So what do? We really, believe it or not, law enforcement doesn't want to have to enforce certain things on homeless, but then you get people that call and say, look, if you don't, you're not doing your job. We're paying you to enforce the law. This person's breaking the law. So we find ourselves in this really weird middle area. So, okay, fine. We'll write the ticket. We know the ticket's not going to do much good. Now, they can take it to homeless court, or it'll go to warrant, and then we can arrest them later on the warrant. But all that does is send them to jail for a couple of days, and they're right back out, and the problem is not solved.
And they're still homeless. They're still mentally ill.
Yeah.
And the cycle continues.
Exactly.
What interventions do you use as an outreach officer that have been most effective for you?
I work a lot, well, I work a lot with Orange County Outreach and Engagement. And so if somebody has an issue, let's say they've got an alcohol or drug problem and they're looking for detoxing or rehab, I can link them with certain people that they're able to get them through to a program if there's one available. So that helps. But it's nice to be out on the street. And then when the person's at that situation or at that moment of crisis where they need the help, I'm there. Otherwise, the next day, they might be past that and not need that or not feel that they need that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you guys know it better than I do. You got to be there at the right time. So you've got that. You've got the ASL up in the canyon. You've got Project Homecoming where we are able to get people to go back to family and provide them with a ticket to go back. Just different things that, you know, have worked for us.
How many people would you say that you've placed in like a rehab or a detox and said, let's take this step and try to get at some of the core issues here?
You know, hard to say that I've actually gotten to be able to go. A lot of them will come to you and say, hey, I want a rehab.
Right.
And then you set it up and then they flake on you. Mm-hmm. And so I've had many, many people do that. Well, you'll set it up. But the ones that actually go, and you guys have seen this many times, you'll set it up, and then the ones that actually go, the number is probably 10% of that group. So maybe 20 people that have actually gone and succeeded based upon me helping them. Now, there's many others that have gone and succeeded elsewhere, done their own thing, or I've been a small part of it. So it's hard to put a number on it.
If someone comes and says, can you do this for me? And then it takes a considerable amount of work to line all of those things up to say, we're going to go to this hospital or we're going to go to this program,
right,
or do those sorts of things. And then they don't follow through. Are you a three strikes and you're out? You didn't follow through. I'm not going to deal with you anymore. Or do you keep doing it every time they come back?
No. I had an officer ask me that the other day. He said, Jason, when do you write somebody off? And you don't. There's some people that I have that have burned me over and over, and that I'll have a little bit less belief for, that they're really sincere when they come to me. But if somebody could have 20 arrests in a year for being drunk in public, just a chronic problem, and you know, they could come to me and they can say, as a matter of fact, an example, we've got a kid that's been here for a couple of years and lately has been on a bender. And he came to me, and we've probably arrested him 20 times in the last month. I'm just a chronic problem. And he came to me and said, you know, Ferris, I want to go back to Missouri. And I said, you know what, I'll hook you up. I've no problem helping you up as long as there's family there. And I've spoken with family. Family will take him back. They'll help him and his girlfriend. And I'll help anybody as long as they come to me and say, you know, we need some help. No matter what they've done, or because it's counterproductive if I don't.
Is that how that Project Homecoming works? Is that if someone wants to be reunited with their family, there has to be some place for them to go? Because I think the concern that people have with that program or programs like that is that we're just sort of shipping the problem,
yeah,
to another state. But that's not how that works.
Or we're paying for people to take vacations back home and then come back. I think that's the other criticism I've heard. But
sure.
I'm curious. Because you do call family and make sure there's a place for them to land. What's that call like?
99% of the time, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I've never provided somebody with a ticket anywhere unless there's somebody on the other side that's saying,
right,
that says, I will pick them up at the airport or at the bus depot and I will take them in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm very staunch in believing I'm not going to ship my problem off to somebody else, and because I don't want, it's karma. I don't,
right,
want somebody to send their problem to me. I don't expect, you know, another agency to,
yeah,
send their people to me and vice versa. So if I send somebody somewhere, there's definitely somebody there that'll help them. Now, once they get there, if they don't help them, that's on them. I don't have any way to control that. And with the criticism of people coming back vacation, I do talk to the person. I'll say, hey, look, mm-hmm, this is not a vacation. This is a one-way ticket. I can't keep you from coming back. There's no legal,
right,
recourse, and nor would I, you know, put that on somebody.
Yeah.
But of all the people I've provided a ticket to, I maybe have had 5 people come back, and mm-hmm, they eventually leave again anyhow.
Yeah.
One person I've sent to Phoenix twice, and he's been gone you know, the second time. But he came back for some court stuff, and it's a $80 ticket. And the cost of arresting a person, yeah, between, you know, the booking and the paperwork and the court fees and all the things that we incur, our hours and everything, it's cheaper to buy a $100, $200 ticket for somebody, mm-hmm, to help them out.
It's one of the things that we talk about a lot when we talk about permanent supportive housing and other, you know, housing solutions for homeless people, is that the most expensive place for anyone to spend the night is in a hospital. After that, the most expensive place for someone to spend the night is incarcerated.
Jail.
So there has to be, just economically, there has to be better solutions than using hospitals and jails to deal with homeless people.
And what's the saying, that the largest mental health facility is the jail? Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Absolutely.
And we try to keep people out of there. A real quick example, we had a subject that was starting fires at a location not too long ago. Well, we arrested him for starting the fires. That's obviously a crime. And I had been in contact with his family a couple of weeks prior, and his family is a very caring family out of Florida, and he's not taking his meds, and he went to Hawaii for a little bit and came to Laguna and caused some disruption while he was here. Well, he got arrested for the arson, and while he was here, I was able to call the CAT team, the crisis assessment team, the people that do the 5150, the mental health.
These are county mental health workers.
Yeah, county mental health workers. And I called them saying, normally what would happen is we'd arrest him, send him to county jail. He'd see the judge. Judge would say, okay, you know, you get a month or whatever in jail or whatever your sentence is. Boom, you're out. And then he's back on the street. Well, we're able to call CAT. CAT came in. They did the 5150 hold on him. And they said, yeah, you know, he needs some help. So they sent him to Royale. And he was able to, he's been medicated for the last 2 months, and he's doing insanely well.
Royale is a mental health facility, right?
Yeah. Sorry. insanely well.
No pun intended.
Yeah, that's a Freudian slip.
But Royale is one of the county's, like, really hardcore mental health institutions, and there aren't many. Mm-hmm. But that's one where people will be sent if they...
Yeah. So his family's ecstatic, and I will actually provide him with a ticket to go back home. Mm-hmm. But... There's where you go, where instead of sending him to jail, he was able to get the mental health help he needed, and the court stuff will be taken care of in the meantime, and then he'll go home and hopefully do much better.
I think anyone who's seen you work, or as I've actually had the privilege to sort of tag along sometimes while you're doing your job, and anyone who's homeless, and lots of people who aren't homeless, stop you and talk to you and want to engage you and find out what you're doing and ask for your help. Is there any big accomplishment that really sticks out to you that you go, like, this is something that I'm really proud of to say that I did in this job?
Something I learned early on is I don't measure my successes by the big things, because simply, and you guys know this once again better than I do, it's the little things, because sometimes the group that we work with, they're so difficult to just get an in with. And once you get them to trust you, that's a victory for me. And sometimes if it's being able to convince that person, instead of sleeping down here in the downtown area, but to go up to the ASL, the sleeping area up in the canyon, or to agree to go see a mental health worker, that's a huge victory for me. So I've got many of those. But at first it was very discouraging, because I wanted to get that person from the street into a career. That's what I wanted, and with a family. But a real quick story, you know, we were out at Heisler Park a number of years ago, had a subject that we had arrested a number of times. They were having, this is back before the sleeping area in the canyon, and they were having mealtime at Heisler Park. And there was a subject there that was hanging out with the group, and they were just always drinking, causing problems. And I was there with county outreach workers and my mentor, Randy Beck, Santa Ana officer that does what I do, and happened to come across him. And they said, hey, how about him? And I said, I don't know. You know, I've tried with him, didn't really work. And I was brand new at what I was doing, maybe been in about a year or so, less. And they said, well, let's talk to him. They talked to him. And you know what? He said, this is the time. And he ended up going to Charlie Street. He's now, he ended up getting married. He's been back with his kids. He's got a career. He's actually a counselor over at Charlie Street now, doing an incredible, invited me to his wedding. That was probably the neatest thing I've ever seen. And it took years to get there, but it was the little steps that were the victories. And then the big one, you know, the coup de grace was the wedding. Incredible. And you rarely see that, but when you see it, it's worth it.
I think, you know, one of the things you're saying is addicts have to find their moment when they're ready to change. And by having a community police officer out in the community outreach doing the things you're doing, we just increase the possibility that when they meet that moment, there's somebody there that they trust. And right. And you're trained and very good at recognizing those moments and then capitalizing on them. So that makes a difference.
I think there's so many people on the street with so many different personalities. My personality will work with certain people. Mm-hmm. And the other outreach workers will work with other people. So as many people as we can put on the street that are doing outreach, that personality, some of the vets will respect my rank and the uniform differently than others. And so it's only a positive that they have one more person out there, for
Absolutely.
You said it's very difficult and it takes a long time to try and move things in a direction that's more positive. And there's a lot of defeats that happen. There's a lot of disappointments. Any of those stick out to you where it really disappointed you and frustrated you that this didn't happen the way you had hoped it would?
Sure. There's a couple guys that got sober that we were able to get to a rehab, and they were able to get sober and do incredibly well, sometimes for a year or two, and then you see them back on the street. And there's a number of those. But one time I was speaking to a counselor at a place called Redgate in Long Beach, medical detox, one of the few. And he said, and I was venting my frustrations at similar things that, you know, you get these guys in, they come back out, they start drinking again. And he said, it took me 22 times before I went sober. And I've been sober, you know, 20 years or whatever. And I thought then, you know, it's not my job to get people sober. It's my job to be able to offer it to them and to try to connect them. And if they do it, that's on them. So at the same time where it's not my job to get them sober, if they do get sober, it's not my success. It's their success. And it's been interesting how that's been. But there's been a couple deaths even that have disappointed me that I know I could have helped, but they weren't ready to receive the help I could offer.
I think it's goes back to that sort of being able to detach personally from it and say, you know, my job is to facilitate this. Mm-hmm. And it's what gives you longevity in your career is to not be able to take the defeats personally and to not get too caught up in the successes either. That it's not about me, it's about this other person.
Right.
We're going to take a short break. Is that all right with everyone?
That's cool. Good.
Okay. And then we'll be back with Corporal Jason Ferris here on The Friendship Show.
me into shape. I must have been asleep for days. Moving lips to breathe her name. I opened up my eyes and found myself alone, alone, alone above a raging sea. I stole the only girl I loved, drowned her deep inside of me. You knew, soft and lonely. You knew, lost and lonely.
Welcome back to the Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna Beach's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'm here with my co-host, Dawn Hayes.
And I'm not Dawn Hayes.
Dawn Hayes. What?
You just don't know my name today. I signed your paycheck.
What did, I know it. What did I call you before that? I called you Dawn Host Dawn so far.
Host.
Dawn Hayes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dawn Price.
Yes.
Is here. And we're talking with Corporal, what's his name?
Jason yeah. Ferris.
Jason Ferris here on the Friendship Show. I think we have a caller on the line, and we're going to try and get the caller actually onto the air. Let's see. Caller, are you there?
I am here, Mark. Good morning.
Oh, good
wonderful.
Morning.
Oh, Mark, you did it.
Yes. This is a technological coup here on the Friendship Show.
Yeah. Good morning, Dawn.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Jason, do you want to introduce this guest? Because he's actually here at your request.
This is Mike Henderson. He's the corporal in Seal Beach that does the same thing that I do. We've worked together on a number of different things, but mainly on the community outreach group throughout the county. He and I established the organization, and I'll let him talk about it a little bit. He does a lot better job than I do.
So, Mike, what is the community outreach organization?
A couple years ago, when I started doing this job and I got to know Jason and started writing with him in Laguna Beach and learning how to do this job, we talked about creating a group of officers countywide that would get together and talk about best practices in dealing with homeless challenges, law enforcement and homeless challenges. And really, I think it was an effort on our part to learn as much as possible. One thing I've learned about this job is that there's a lot to learn, and there's a lot of ways to solve these problems. Most communities in Orange County are challenged with homeless issues, and officers working in all these communities come up with different ways to address them, creative ways a lot of the time. And we wanted to bring all these officers together so we could learn from each other, mostly. And we do. We meet once a month. It's officers from all over Orange County and outside of Orange County. And we talk about different topics related to homelessness, mental health. And as you guys well know, there's a long list of things that go into this. And so we talk about it on a monthly basis, and we learn from each other. An officer will say, hey, in my community, we're doing this. And I say, hey, that's great, and I can take that idea and I can adapt it and tweak it and maybe work with it in my community. And that's really the benefit of reaching out in this way. And it becomes a networking tool for us. I can't tell you how many times I've called up Jason and said, hey, Jason, I've got this problem, this issue. How have you dealt with it before? And it's great to have that resource. And he says, hey, I've done this in the past and that in the past. So it helps. It helps a lot.
Mike, how many communities have officers dedicated solely to doing outreach with homeless individuals? Is it something that's happening more and more, or does it just become more a part of sort of the general job description of a police officer?
I'd say both. Definitely, police departments are looking at this more and more and saying, we've got to look at these problems in different ways. And I think, starting in the 90s, there was a big push in law enforcement for community-oriented policing. And I think this is a natural outgrowth of that. It's a big part of it is engagement with the community, listening, engaging the stakeholders, and coming up with ideas to address these problems. To answer the other parts of your question, I don't know of a police department that doesn't have some aspect of this where they're assigning police officers specifically to engage these challenges in non-traditional law enforcement ways. For us in Seal Beach, you know, our what we want to do is make sure we're employing the best practices we can in addressing these challenges, because there's so much that goes into it. And I was listening to you earlier in the show, and I couldn't have agreed with Jason Moore. In the past, it was, arrest for a criminal violation and then move on. And I think really the way police departments got smarter about this was that they realized that it wasn't cost effective. We've had an individual here in Seal Beach who we've probably arrested a couple hundred times. And when you're talking about time for a police officer to arrest him, jailers to book him, records clerks to spend the time processing that paperwork, court work, we look at that and say, you know, is this really solving the problem, or are we just going through the motions? And so we really work hard to try to match resources with the problem or the challenge that that homeless person has, and try to help them on their way to find a solution to their issues.
I have a question for both of you, actually, and by extension, the other people in your organization. If you, Mark and I work a lot with the countywide committees that are part of the Commission to End Homelessness, and we look a lot at what other communities are doing in terms of how we could improve the menu of interventions that organizations and government have to deal with people who have homelessness and help them move forward. If you could add a couple of programs that you hear about in other communities that organizations like Friendship Shelter or counties or just resources that we don't have in Orange County, what do you think would help you make a difference that you maybe hear that they do in, you know, other communities that have officers like you?
Well, from what I've seen, and Orange County just does a great job with providing resources. A really great job, and there's a lot of things out there. You know, I don't think I personally haven't had a challenge yet where I haven't been able to match a resource with a person who may need that resource. The challenge I have is in connecting those two, because there's so many different ones. Jason, did you have any ideas on that?
What I would like is more time from the county outreach. And more, not to contradict that, but I would like to be able to have more resources. When I've got somebody that needs a rehab and I pair them up with the outreach worker, it sometimes might take a week before I'm able to get them into a rehab. And I would like to see the county step up and create more more outreach workers, more ways to fast track people into the organization, or maybe some growth of the rehab. There's very few rehabs out there that
will take someone who can't pay.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, every time I get somebody that's willing to go to a rehab, if I can get them in that day or the next day, it's a miracle.
Right. Do you think the new emergency
shelter? Yeah, and I would agree with that. And that's I think what I was trying to say was matching that person with those resources efficiently is really the challenge I have. Frequently I'll find myself, you know, sitting down at the computer and Googling things and calling these different agencies and saying, can you accept this person? Can you accept this person? And many of these organizations are private organizations,
right,
or funded, you know, through charities, and they've got very specific criteria about what they'll accept and what they won't accept. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, but if your challenge doesn't fit that exactly, then you're moving on to the next one, and it can be tough sometimes to find a resource.
And I guess that's my question. Do you hear, when you talk about your colleagues in other counties, other cities, are the thresholds lower? Is this a problem nationally, or do we need to do some work here in Orange County to try to lower those thresholds and take away some of those barriers?
We need, I know in San Diego, I know Santa Monica, they've got some resources there that I wish we had.
Like what?
I know San Diego has I can't remember what it's called. It was a couple of years ago that I was down there, but they've got an outreach group that they're able to get people into rehab literally that day. Yeah. They've got people that have, if they're homeless and they want shelter, they can fast track people through to a shelter relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. At least that's what they were telling me while I was there, and they showed me some of the programs that they had. I don't remember their names. Mm-hmm. I was fairly impressed. I know,
but it's that kind of thing. I mean, we don't need to talk about names.
Yeah,
but
when I was in Santa Monica, they have drop-in shelters. Mm-hmm. We are the only city in the county that has an emergency drop-in shelter, at all.
Right.
And the only one in Orange County. Where Santa Monica, they have three at the time, and that was about 4 years ago. They have three large ones in Santa Monica itself. And they're able, if they get somebody on the street that wants a place to sleep, boom, they can put them in there.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one with 45 beds for the entire county, and that doesn't work.
Nope, not at all. Yeah.
What do you think about?
And I would agree. I'm sorry.
No. What do you think about the Fullerton Emergency Shelter that I believe is going to open probably someday too? And that's supposed to be a year-round shelter. Do you have any thoughts about how that? I guess, Jason, for you specifically, how is that going to have any impact on South Orange County?
For sure, it'll have some impact, just in the sense that it'll be another option.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is full every night. So if it'll be another option, it'll help relieve the pressure. But I think if every city or if every area was able to produce something like Fullerton is, and we've already done,
mm-hmm.
for sure, that would be an incredible amount of help for everybody. But Fullerton, it's, I think, one of those red tape things. By the time it's done and said and done and built and, permitted and everything, I don't know when that's going to get done.
Yeah, I think it's... Just to brag about Laguna Beach for a minute, I think it's really remarkable what we were able to do here with the ASL. And Jason, your leadership had a lot to do with that. But, this Fullerton project, it's amazing. It's wonderful. It's going to help a lot of people. But it's going to take a long time to get it established. They had to buy property. Now they're going to have to rehab that property. From the day we had the idea to use temporary construction trailers to the day we opened the ASL, I believe was like 9 weeks.
Fast.
We did that incredibly quickly, and communities really can if the will is there. I would agree with you that if more communities stepped up like Laguna Beach has done, it would help a lot.
Mike, you had something you wanted to add.
No, I was just going to talk a little bit more about, matching those resources with those who need them. The tough part for us, and I think Jason would agree, is when we come upon someone who needs help, there may be multiple things they need help with.
Mm-hmm.
I may have someone who's homeless, but their issues are really mental illness and then drug abuse. So I've got a couple different things I've got to look at there and try to help him with one while he's, working on the other. And that takes a lot of time, and sometimes it's hard to find those resources that are willing to say, hey, we'll take that on. So I can maybe get him some mental health assistance, but then he's still saddled with perhaps a drug problem. And
right.
So trying to find a resource that'll take on those kinds of unique and specific challenges mm-hmm. are what I face all the time.
Mike, are you and Jason familiar with the Housing First model? Have you heard that?
Yes.
And you have, what's your opinion on Housing First for, let's say, chronically homeless individuals specifically?
It's an interesting concept. And if, from what I understand, is you provide the housing for the person without strings attached. And many of those people will rise to the occasion that's what they need. That once they get that, then the other things will start falling into place relatively on their own. With some assistance, obviously, rather than force the counseling on them, and then if they comply with these certain things, then we'll provide you with the roof. Is that, what do I think about it? I think it is an incredible opportunity, and I think it's a great thing. There's been a lot of studies done, and I know you guys have brought them to me, or you guys have shown me. how it has worked. It's difficult to try to convince people that are outside of this arena that it does work. I know in talking to officers about it, they're like, well, wait, you just give them a place to live and they're just going to do drugs the whole time and that's all they're ever going to do. Yeah, sometimes that does happen, but often you kind of weed out some of the people that you're going to put in there, but often that's not what happens. And if you don't provide them with the roof, and it's going to continue anyhow. And
I think it gets back to the economic stuff that you and Mark were talking about at the beginning of the show, where that housing is way cheaper than nights and nights and nights in jail and a hospital.
Right.
One of the things, I was just at a Housing First conference a couple of weeks ago and talking with some people in San Diego about what they have done. And one of the outreach workers there, the point that she made, which I had never considered, was she said, if I put them in an apartment, I know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of their biggest frustrations is that you set something up for someone and now it's going to take 4 days, and in 4 days I have to try and find my client again, and they could be anywhere. And if I can't find them at that time, the service may go away or it's no longer available. If they have a place to live, I can go knock on the door. They may refuse to see me, that's their right, but at least I have the opportunity to find them and say, it's time.
Right. Right, and I like that. Mm-hmm. It's difficult sometimes. A lot of homeless do have cell phones. Many of them do, not all of them, obviously. And even just trying to call them is great, but if you had a place for them to be, sure, that would be a great solution.
Mark, we're almost
And I would echo that. I've read a little bit on the Housing First model, and you know, I think the thrust of it is that the first thing is obtain stable housing, and then you can start to work on other things. I mean, it's hard to say, hey, I've got a mental illness, but I also need to get out of the rain or the cold. You know, the first need that person's going to have is shelter. So I understand that model, and I would echo what Jason was saying.
That's great. We are out of time almost, and I had a quick story I wanted to tell before we finish, because I think it shows the impact that people like Officer Ferris and Officer Henderson have on our homeless population. We had a client, I don't know how long ago it was now, maybe 2.5 years ago, that we had a client pass away, actually at Friendship Shelter, pass away in the night. And when we went to that client's file to figure out who that person had listed as typically the family member who should be contacted in the case of emergency, it was you, Officer Ferris, that he had listed. And so obviously when he came into our shelter, you were the person he felt closest to. And I think that's just an incredible testament to the kind of work that you do, Mike, and you do, Jason, out in the community, that you touch people to the point that when they're sitting in front of that piece of paper and they have to write down, who do I want called if there's an emergency for me, that's, you're who they think of.
Hmm. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that.
Thank you, Don.
It was quite a day, I remember. And the other thing I want to thank Jason for publicly is that he stayed with us that whole day. That was a very odd day for Friendship Shelter. We certainly don't have that happen. It was a very tough day. And just having him there to kind of lead us through the process was really incredible.
Okay. Ida May's in the studio. Ida May, you had something you wanted to say?
Well, Jason, you know, my brothers are listening from Texas,
mm-hmm.
and they're not so clean and sober, and they don't mind me saying that over the air. But they're wondering if you could just send them to me.
There you go. There you go.
I come from a real normal home. I'm pretty clean
how
and sober.
How about we send you to them? That might be a better solution.
You know, that's in Texas. I'm all over
How's
it.
How's that? There you go.
Great show, y'all.
Thanks.
All right. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
You bet. And maybe you can join us again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you both for what
great.
You do
Thank
in the community.
You.
Okay. Ida May is up next, so we'll be back here at KX 93.5 FM. Stick around.